Äntligen trädgårdsfest på bygghemma.se. Vad sägs om ett hus på köpet när du köper din Gardena-robot? Eller klicka hem nya smarta Husqvarna Aspire-redskap. Välkommen till ditt byggvaruhus på nätet på bygghemma.se.
Lördagsgästen på Retro FM.
Ja, det är lördag förmiddag och man är ju alltid nyfiken på någon, och när man har en livslevande Hollywood-legend framför sig så måste man ju bara passa på att fråga en himla massa saker. Carl Weathers, back on the block, welcome back.
What a great introduction, and, yeah, and thank you for the welcome on this beautiful, magnificent sunny day. So let's hope that every person that hears this broadcast has this beautiful sun shining down on them, yeah, as we have here in Malmo.
And you came here at the right time. I think the last time you were here, it was like in the middle of winter. It was pretty dark.
I think it was colder, yes. I think it was colder, and I think you were in a catastrophic time of darkness.
Yeah.
And I brought some sunlight to you.
Sunshine from California. Flew in just the other day.
Correct.
Still in Los Angeles?
Still in Los Angeles. I keep threatening to find a different place to live. And as everybody knows, moving is just a tragedy for most people, because you start to dig out things you, yeah, don't remember that you had. And you ask yourself, why didn't I throw this away 10 years ago?
How long have you lived at the same place now, Carl?
The longest ever that I've owned a house in one place since 2004.
Wow.
So do the math. We're coming up on 20 years. And I have probably, every house I've lived in since I've been an adult that I owned, this maybe is the sixth. And I think the longest I was ever in a house was maybe 8 years before I sold it, moved off to someplace else.
I'm in the same situation. 20 years at my first house.
Yeah.
And it's unimaginable how much crap you collect during those years.
Oh, man. I don't know. You know, hoarders will be hoarders.
Yeah.
We're afraid to let things go. Yeah. And also, I don't know if you're like me, but you stick something in a corner.
Yeah.
And then you put something in front of it. And then you put something in front of it. And 10, 15 years later, you go, what the heck is all that stuff in there? So there you are. That's me.
Did you get the chance to clean that out during the pandemic? Because I've been some crazy 2 years for us in the media and acting industry.
I think what I probably did was collect more and then pile it on top of the stuff that was already there. You know, the best thing, if there is anything good about the pandemic, as we were talking, was that you have a chance to reflect. And I think some of the things that, I don't know about everybody else, but I think the things you wind up cleaning out are the, mm-hmm, things that are in the closets of your own mind. You know, you go into those closets and you go, what is that all about? Who is that guy? You know, and you start to discard some of that stuff, get rid of it. And then you meet people who will bring new stuff, you know, and you get new ideas and maybe some new interests.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes you away a little bit out of what you were mired in for all those years, you know, and what you'd become so comfortable,
yeah,
with, that those challenges just create, hopefully, another dimension of you.
How did the past 2 years affect you personally, or your family and your friends?
Oh, man, good question. Knock on wood. Yes, but this is actual wood. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I hear that sound.
This is not IKEA.
No, it's not. By the way, folks, here's the crazy thing about you Swedes, okay? I heard this just recently, that IKEA was having problems financially until they introduced Swedish meatballs and the economy for IKEA took off.
Boom!
So what, that's it. So what is it about Swedish meatballs? I like them, but not that much that I would help IKEA. Anyway, just a little straying off to the,
yeah,
side here. You know, I think in a lot of ways, having those couple of years has had some advantages.
Yeah.
Because I think we've all, in some ways, gotten a little closer as a result of that, you know, because you found yourself maybe not having to interact directly with somebody else, but you communicated a lot, whether it was by computer or by phone or whatever. And Then there's the other side, which is maybe people shut themselves off a bit more. Mm-hmm. So for me, I kind of went interior and took a look at Carl and some of the stuff that Carl's about or thinks he's about. And I got a chance to deal with family, which was fantastic in a lot of ways. And, you know, as I said earlier, clean out those closets. So, you know, there's been good and bad in it all.
What would you say to the young Carl Weathers, looking back, reflecting, have a time to, I mean, looking back to the kid grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana?
What a great question. Oh, man. You know, it's funny that you ask me that because my sweetheart and I were just talking about this about 2 days ago. And that same question came up, you know, and I asked her because she brought it up, the whole thing. She was talking about somebody else. And she brought it up and I asked her, what would you say? And she told me, and she asked me, what would I say? And I said, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. Because as a kid, I think with many of us, depending on the situations we grew up in at home, you know, with our families, with our friends, depending on not only the economics of the situation, but the social kind of fabric construct of the situation, we might not feel sometimes that we really have a chance, you know, or that we're doing very well compared to when we look around, you know. Everything else looks much better, much greener than it does at
home.
Always
green.
Exactly. You know, the other side of the fence, as they say. And so I think I was, as a young man, as a boy growing up, looking at the world and seeing the world as a place in some ways that was foreign and hostile, you know. And as I got older and managed to somehow be more successful in the things I went after and the things I tried to do, I think one of the things that I realized was kind of like the old Nike saying, just do it.
Just do it.
Just get out there and do it. Yeah. Because the cosmos doesn't have a preference. Yeah. And by that I mean, if it's raining outside, it's not going to rain on some people. It's going to rain on everybody. And if it's sunny outside, it's not going to just be sunny for some people. It's going to be sunny for everybody.
But it feels like the sun is shining just on you and rain is just falling down exactly on Carl.
That's right, on Carl. And that's only because I said something many, many years ago, you know, and this is kind of anecdotal of just my career in a way, you know, the career that this guy has had. I remember when the first Rocky opened, I was in New York City. We were promoting it and it opened. And I was a young actor still. I was, I think, about 28 or 29 years old. And that's a young actor as far as I'm concerned compared to now, right? All these years later. And I was walking down the street in Manhattan. And anybody who's been to New York City in Manhattan knows it's literally just tall buildings. And so you're in a very different kind of landscape. But lots of people on the streets and all these vendors who were selling hot dogs and in the winter chestnuts and all kinds of, you know, stuff for people to eat. And all of a sudden, a vendor called out. And this was the day after Rocky had opened. Yo, Apollo. I'm not kidding you. And I looked around and I thought, that is bizarre. The movie just opened. This movie was so successful so quickly. And now as I continued to walk, other vendors would yell out, yo, Apollo. Nobody is prepared for success. We're all kind of reared and prepared for failure. So again, what would I tell that young Carl? It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Don't worry so much. Don't feel that the world is on top of you. Roll through it, man. See what's there for you and what you can capitalize on, you know? And enjoy the ride. Really enjoy the ride.
Dåliga vibrationer är att gå utan byxor till jobbet. Bra vibrationer är när du inser att mobilen är i bröstfickan. Alla abonnemang för 20 kronor i månaden i 4 månader. Vimla, mobiloperatören med bra vibrationer.
Äntligen trädgårdsfest på bygghemma.se. Vad sägs om ett hus på köpet när du köper din Gardena-robot? Eller klicka hem nya smarta Husqvarna Aspire-redskap. Välkommen till ditt byggvaruhus på nätet på bygghemma.se.
Your class of 66, Carl.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Yes.
I'm class of 83,
see,
by the
thanks
way.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
I was thinking when I saw your graduation date, and I started thinking about America back in the 60s, a Vietnam War going on. Were you ever considered for being drafted, or what happened? Can you tell me that story?
Yeah, man. I was really, I think, fortunate because, of course, there's so much history now that we know that was associated with that particular war, that particular conflict, and that particular part of the world. You know, I was having a conversation today with Jesper, who runs the show, you know, here in Malmo, that we're all here to participate in. And at that time, the Vietnam War, as many wars are, and what takes place is the kind of information that you get, you know, is skewed. It's skewed in the way that the government, if you will, the people in command and in control want you to believe. And unless you are fortunate enough to be exposed to other outlets to get some sense of what is really going on, you may buy into that one sort of line of thinking. And at that time, of course, we didn't realize that the Vietnamese, the people of Vietnam, were struggling against basically their own government in a way, or the people at the top of their government who were communists and who wanted the country to be, you know, to run in a particular kind of way, and that they'd been fighting, that the French had been there forever, hence the great food that the Vietnamese have, baguettes and all the rest of it that goes along with the cuisine. But that it had, that struggle had been going on for so long, and guess what? The Vietnamese had ousted them eventually. And America, the United States, goes in and we're going to help them and straighten things out. Well, didn't work so well, did it? You know?
Looking back.
You know? Looking back, yeah, that's what I mean about history, you know? And there were a lot of, I think, brave and courageous and patriotic young men and women who lost their lives. And what did we gain, really? I mean, that's war. What did we gain? I mean, right now, of course, you know, God, we're getting very political here, but we look at Ukraine.
Yeah.
The same thing. Look at all these brave men and women who are fighting, you know, to keep out this kind of aggression and authoritarianism. And at the end of it all, regardless of which way it goes, you're going to have to ask yourself, what did we gain? You know, what did we gain from war? What did we gain from losing all these lives? People who may have contributed to society in such positive ways, they're no longer with us. So I was just lucky. I mean, that's really the
answer. Your number didn't come up for the draft.
Yes, it did. That's my point. That's what I'm getting to. I know I'm long-winded with it, but what happened was I was in university, and I tell people this very often. I played college football, American football. Yeah. I was on scholarship to San Diego State University. Don Coryell was my coach, and I played with a number of players who went into the NFL, myself included, right? We were just fortunate. I was fortunate that even though my number came up, and at that time, it was called being 1A, right, which was you were eligible for the draft. I don't know of any football player who ever was drafted. Maybe it happened, but I don't know of any. There were some who volunteered. But the point to the whole story is we, in a way, were entertainment back at home. I think we were diversionary in a way. And that's why we weren't drafted. Because if you take away the entertainment at home and that thing that's kind of like feeding pablum to a baby, you know, we were filling up this need for something other than the talk of war. And so you could go watch football on a Sunday or a Saturday, whichever it was. I didn't get drafted. Lucky me, man. Lucky me. That's why I go back to what you asked me earlier. Carl, don't worry so much. It's
gonna
all
going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. I mean, with all of us. And that isn't to say that there aren't people who the opposite happens to, that things aren't okay, because there's always the opportunity for, you know, hell in a handbasket to come to you.
Yeah.
But worrying about it doesn't get you very far. It's not going to change anything. The only thing that can change things is your actions, you know?
Who kicked in, into the acting business? Who got you into? Because you had a, you started your career in football on the scholarship. You went to NFL. You went, you played Canadian football. You played Oakland Raiders.
Correct.
How come acting?
Well, good question. You got great questions here. Acting started far earlier than that. Acting started when I was in grade school. I don't know what you call it here, primary school?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started was when I was in fifth or sixth grade, I did a play. So in doing that, I was a kid who was, you know, and I'm sure there are some of them out there listening to us who probably had the same experience. I did not have an idyllic home situation. And I was always looking for something outside the home to do. I mean, that was where I found such joy, you know. And I did that play, and man, I was hooked. There was nothing like standing.
What was the role?
I don't even remember. It was written by one of the instructors that I had in fifth or sixth grade, a man named Mr. Slush. And it was a play that I don't remember what it was about. I just remember at times the audience laughing and applauding me. And there is no drug like adulation. When people pat you on the back and applaud your work and give you props, you know, there's something about that that is so heady. And plus, I loved it. I just, there was something about it that I loved, that standing on stage and performing, it just kept going. And kept going. And then, as I said, I was on a football scholarship, but I majored in theater. And so it just seemed that it was in my blood. And there was this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of existence, you know? And I got my degree in theater. And at a certain point, though, you know, most of us know, at least in America, most young girls aren't gravitating toward guys in tights playing roles in Shakespeare.
Jocks.
They like the jocks.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think maybe just somehow I realized that and football became much more of an interest. And fortunately, God had given me some talents and you know, some ability. And I made it. And I played. And I team after team, I was successful, you know. And as you matriculate, obviously going from high school, junior high school is what we called it, into high school and then into university and then professionally. So there were a lot of years there of getting better at it and having some God-given talent. And again, you know, don't worry so much, Carl. Just go on and do what you're doing, man, you know?
When did Hollywood came calling?
It didn't call. I went to it.
Okay.
Hollywood is an interesting animal. And I mean that in the most generous of ways, because no matter what business you're in, you know, the old dog-eat-dog, it is that way, regardless of the business. And if you have talent, and if you have a lot of luck, because we all know luck is so involved in all of this, good fortune, you know, the gods smile down on you, whatever, however a person wants to put that. But you have to have a certain amount of talent to make it. And sometimes the talent is just in finding ways to be resourceful yourself to make your career happen, you know. But I knew, I think I was fortunate enough to come in contact with enough people who impressed upon me one thing. If you want to be a stage actor in the U.S., where do you go? You go to New York, because that's where theater is professionally. If you want to be a film actor or a television actor, you go to Los Angeles, because that's where it is. That's the kind of the epicenter of the business, even though people shoot in all kinds of states, each state, you know, and those states are growing with their ability to have productions there because of, obviously, you need people who are craftspeople and all that sort of stuff, you know, in those areas. But I went to Los Angeles, and, man, within I told people at that time I was going to go to Los Angeles and give myself a year to make it. That's such a joke. Within 6 months, though, I was working.
Wow.
And I was being paid to work. And it went on and on and on from there all these years later. And I might add that when I was in Oakland playing for the Raiders, in the off season, I did play, I did do a couple plays, but I got work in San Francisco just across the bay. It would be like from here over to Copenhagen, you know?
Yeah.
Cross the bridge and bang. And San Francisco at that time had a lot going on comparatively to these days. And I wound up getting roles in commercials and did a lot of commercials. Budweiser, Miller Beer, one of the airlines I think I did a commercial for, and very small regional commercials, and worked background in a couple of movies and said, that's it.
You did Magnum Force.
Magnum Force was one of them. That's right. Yeah. I'll tell you another one that you probably didn't know about was a movie called The Candidate with Robert Redford. And I was a background player. I was, man. Yeah. And the thing about it was, that movie was the movie where I said, never again. I am not going to be in the background. I want to be Robert Redford. I don't want a guy to be the guy standing behind Robert Redford. And, you know, I attribute a lot of the success that I've really been fortunate enough to have on people like Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte and Woody Strode, who was in a lot of John Ford movies, and ultimately even Robert Redford, because watching him in that movie inspired me to want to be not the guy standing as I sit behind him, but the guy who was him. So here we are.
I think the first movie I saw you in was Force 10 from Navarone.
Oh, my goodness.
Favorite adventure movie.
Yes, a lot of people love that movie. You know, that was with Robert Shaw and Harrison Ford.
Edward Fox.
Edward Fox, Barbara Bach.
Ringo Starr's.
Richard Kiel, Ringo Starr's wife.
Yeah.
But, you know, in her own right, she was a Bond girl at one time, you know, in one of the Bond movies.
The Spy Who Loved Me, yeah.
Yes. So we were really, man, I'll tell you, back then, it was a whole nother ballgame in movies and internationally made movies, you know, which that was. And to this day, just as you just did, people mention that movie. They loved it. We shot, funny thing about that movie was, that was one of the first times I'd shot, I think it was the first movie I'd shot that was really a big international movie, because we shot a lot, maybe the most of that movie in Yugoslavia, the then Yugoslavia, and Tito was still alive. And we shot in a place called Zabjak for a few months up in the mountains, and then we were in, and we shot in Montenegro, we shot Sarajevo, I think. We shot in, right on the coast, Rijeka, Opatija. And there was someplace else. I'd never traveled there to that city, but they shot there. And then, of course, we shot on the Isle of Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then we shot in the UK.
Wow.
So we were all over the place. 5 months it took to make that movie. That was a long trip.
And then came Rocky, and then came the 80s, and then came the 90s. And we have a pandemic. And they had The Mandalorian in Disney Plus. I'm not going to mention age. We'll
don't you
that.
Dare. Don't you dare do that. Oh, boy. But wait now. Here's the deal. I don't care if you mention age, because look at me, baby. Look at me. I'm kidding. There are days I have to roll out of bed. I don't actually get out of bed. I just roll over, and oh, man, the body is saying, wait a minute, friend.
Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, I mean, how did you end up Mandalorian the first season as an actor and then now directing The Mandalorian?
Yeah. We just finished the third season, by the way. So here we are 5 years later, and we're still around. Disney Plus apparently is enjoying what's being done, and the fans, of course, are, because they keep tuning in. But how did it happen? Because I'm also a director and have been since 1993, I am very active at the Directors Guild in Los Angeles. And I've been on the board, and I've been on the Western Council, and I've participated and still do in a number of other ways in the Guild. And Jon Favreau is also the creator of The Mandalorian, mm-hmm. or co-creator of The Mandalorian, which comes out of Star Wars, which is George Lucas. Yeah. And one of our other exec producers, Dave Filoni, who the Clone Wars and mm-hmm. who's done so much and is at this time currently, as we speak, working on Ahsoka, which is one of the characters, right? Mm. So Jon Favreau, one day at one of the after one of the meetings at the Directors Guild, approached me and said, you know, and obviously I because we're in these meetings that have to do basically with the business of the guild, but all of the directors who are involved, or all of the participants who are involved, because some are stage managers and assistant directors, all the things under the banner of the director's team, would contribute in these meetings and ask questions and answer mm-hmm. questions. And I'd listen to John over, man, so many meetings. Mm-hmm. And he's a brilliant guy. I mean, he really is. Aside from being a wonderful director who we've seen so much that he's done, mm-hmm. and an actor. But John approached me one day and said, I'm involved in this project that we're putting together, and I'd like you to play a role in it. And, of course, it's Jon Favreau, so I'm interested right away. Yeah. You know, it'd be like Scorsese or Spielberg coming up to you and saying, I'd like you to take a look at a role in a movie. I'm yeah. like, yeah, show yeah. me the role, baby, yeah. you know? So we talked. I went to the studio that he was putting together, basically, and we were in a very, very large conference room. And he had all this art on the walls. And when I say large, I'd say it was, not I'd say, it truly was three times larger than this space we're sitting in now. And this is a large space.
Yeah.
You know, for a radio show, sometimes they're half this size. So all this art covered the walls. I mean, completely 360 degrees. But not only was it art, it was some of the images were so spectacular that I was intrigued even more than just it's Jon Favreau. And then he sent me the script or handed me a script, which I read, and it was like, oh, yeah, man, I'm in for this. You know, at this point in my career, this seems like an opportunity for a whole new resurgence of this particular actor, Carl Weathers. So I said yes, but I also said to John, you know, what I'm really interested in is directing. Hmm. Okay, if we get another season, we'll look at giving you a shot. So we did the first season. It was successful. Come the second season, we're going again, and I got to direct one episode, which many people, I must say, have said it was the best episode of the season. They loved it. Yeah. And here we are, third season, and I directed an episode this season, was in as an actor in four of them. So The Mandalorian, for me, has been an absolute godsend and a joy. And we have so much talent in it, and the technology, as you and I were talking, is yeah. so spectacular that it's just, again, a learning situation. So I go back to that, you know, first question. Hey, man, don't worry about things. It's going to be okay. For me, it's been more than okay. You know, all these years later, from 1974 was yeah. when I went to Los Angeles to try yeah. to become a professional actor. Here we are in 2022.
If you had looked in the future in 1974, would you have believed it that you will be still in the business and still be doing this stuff?
How could I have? I mean, I was this young guy who had so little experience. But I wasn't, at the time, I don't know that I was concerned about the future. I was concerned about the moment. And for me, and I'll tell you something, too. As an actor, one of the disciplines, as a film actor, television actor, is to be in the moment. That's the challenge. Because if you're looking at what's going to come up in the next scene, then that means you're not here. You have to be present to what's going on in this scene. It's like this conversation. Mm-hmm. If I'm anticipating what's going to happen 2 seconds from now, then this second gets lost, and there's no authenticity to the moment. If I'm answering your question in this particular space at this particular time, then I give you the answer that's appropriate. If I'm thinking 2 minutes from now, how can it be appropriate and authentic? So I couldn't, in a million years, have looked all these years ahead and been thinking about that. It didn't exist at that time. It just didn't, unless we're one of those people who says it's all on a continuum anyway and it's all happening simultaneously. Yeah. But that ain't me.
It's been great having you, Carl. You're heading off to the sci-fi world down at the slaughterhouse, Slakthuset, as we say here in Malmö.
Yes, yes. And I only have one regret about coming to Malmö this time. I know no Swedish, so the television is just a blur. It's just women and men speaking in a language that truly is foreign.
And everybody sounds like the Swedish chef in the Muppet Show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, let's face it.
How would you sound doing Swedish?
Oh, I'd be very terrible. I'd have some accent like this, you know, and I'd do a little thing at the end. It would be brutal. It would be brutal.
Carl Weathers, love having you here.
Thank you.
See you back in whenever.
At the slaughterhouse. Come on. Join us for the weekend, man. Yeah. That's going to be a beautiful Saturday to come and see all these actors there. And I'm going to be there and so many others that you've enjoyed over the years. And we're going to have some fun.
Lördagsgästen på Retro FM.
Dåliga vibrationer är att skära av sig tummen i köket.
Ja!
Bra vibrationer är att du har en tumme till och kan scrolla vidare. Alla abonnemang för 20 kronor i månaden i 4 månader. Vimla, mobiloperatören med bra vibrationer.